Chapter 12. Manny pulled up to a pump at an empty filling station about halfway between the tiny towns of Yoakum and Cuero. Gasoline fumes swirled through the open windows. Noisy buzzards circled overhead. There was an attached convenience store, with its shiny, red Coca-Cola refrigerator, padlocked ice machine emblazoned with large, frozen red letters, I-C-E, across the front, and a coin-operated creamsicle machine. Kit had been chewing her dry tongue since they'd left the motel and would have enjoyed something cold and sweet right about now.
"I'm thirsty," she said.
"It's just nerves," Manny said.
"Okay, look," he told her, and pointed to a teenage clerk, acne pebbling his cheekbones, who sat tipped back in his chair. He was so absorbed in his nudie magazine that he did not appear to notice the two drive up.
"This is what you call a perfect mark," Manny said. "The guy in there, he's a good target. He's distracted. Look at his eyes. See how red they are? Pretty sure he's stoned. Not banking on it, but if he is, he'll be slow and confused, not likely to fight back. Did you see the register when we drove up? Slightly open? He's lazy. He doesn't like to unlock it every time. Not sure how much is in there, but it's the end of the day. I'm betting the till is as full as it'll ever be."
Kit tried to play it cool, but was bursting with questions.
"What will you be doing?" she asked. "Do I go in with you?"
"I will be working my powers of persuasion," he said,
and began to drive around the back of the store.
"And you're driving Getaway."
He backed in, parked in an oily loading zone, and turned toward her.
"Here's what you need to know. Park out of sight and pointed in the direction we want to head. See here? We're facing southwest so we can cut across the lot to the main road and scoot onto Route 77. Keep the engine running and accelerate smoothly. Don't gun it like an idiot. You don't save any time by doing that, and you lose control of your vehicle. You have enough power to get where you need to go without burning up my tires and running us off the road. Besides, you go too fast and you'll look suspicious. Just keep cool, kitty cat."
"Keep cool," she repeated, feeling hot around the neck and armpits. "What do we do if he's got a gun?"
"He won't, trust me. I'm a student of human nature. Whoever his boss is would never take the chance. Better to lose a couple grand than risk this kid shooting himself or someone else."
Her heart kicked at her ribcage like it was trying to bust out.
"Don't worry," Manny said, gathering the strands of his dark hair into a short ponytail.
"I always win."
He rapped his knuckles against the dash.
"Well?"
Had she looked him in the eyes, he would have seen how happy she was.
"Why the hell not?" she said.
Manny patted her on the knee, got out of the car, turned, and rested his arms in the window. She slid over and adjusted the seat and mirrors.
"Now remember, keep it running and be cool. I'll be back before you know it."
He turned toward the station, and as he walked away, she saw the gun tucked between his waistband and the small of his back. From his back pocket, he pulled what looked like a green sock and worked it over his head. He turned around and winked through the ski mask, then disappeared around the whitewashed corner of the building. She gripped the wheel to keep from trembling. The gun, the mask, the Getaway. It was all new and terrifying. Had he been doing holdups all along and just now asked her to join? Hadn't he trusted her enough before? She smacked both cheeks with her hands, then rehearsed the escape to focus her attention. Her eyes never left the corner where she had last seen him, where she willed him to return each passing moment. Every car that whipped by made her jump. She had expected shouting, screams.
but all she could hear were the baritone idling of the engine and the sound of her own shallow breath. As much as she wanted to keep cool, she could only imagine the worst. The image of Manny with a handful of cash and a crisp bullet hole in the center of his forehead. And then he was jogging toward her, a brown bag, neatly folded in hand. Even with his mask on, he looked happy. In a few strides, he slipped in beside her. She was so relieved she wanted to cry.
"You're on," he said. "No rush."
She eased her foot on the gas as she released the clutch, going slowly like he had said, scanned the road ahead for oncoming traffic. Then she heard a cowbell and a door clanging shut.
"Shh,"
he said in response to her startling. A heavyset man in an orange hunting shirt and reflective sunglasses appeared at the rear entrance of the station.
"Who's he?"
she asked, slamming the gas. She let go the clutch too quickly, and they lurched and stalled out.
"Hey,"
the man said.
"I called the cops. Y'all stop, or I'm gonna have to scoot ya."
Kit could scarcely breathe and felt prickly all over. This was the closest she had come to getting caught since the day Manny picked her up. The man raised a pistol from a straight arm and squinted.
"What's he doing?" Kit said, her heart tearing around her chest. "Is he gonna shoot?"
"Easy does it," Manny said.
And when his hand grazed her neck, it was cool and steady. She popped the gear into neutral, restarted the car, and engaged the clutch. The man released a round high over their heads.
"Jesus Christ!"
she yelled, ducking her head out of sight.
"Hot dog! He's not fucking around."
"Okay, stay low,"
Manny said and slid down in the seat. He was grinning, like this was fun for him.
"And don't worry, he wants to be a hero, but he's scareder than you are."
She took a large breath to calm her nerves. Then, peering over the dash, shifted into first and swapped the clutch for the gas. They coasted forward and she repeated for second gear, then third, slipping easily down the path she had planned. Another round went off, and when she looked in her rear view, the man had dropped the gun to his side. Once they were on 77, she finally exhaled.
"Holy shit," she said.
Manny was laughing.
"Slow down, sister."
The speedometer read 95 miles per hour. She downshifted to 65 and cruised in the direction of the motel, large with pride and feeling something like a woman. Manny yoked his arms across her shoulders, fingers grazing her collarbone. His touch felt new, and so did she. She felt like his partner, no longer his pet. Before, her feelings for him had confused her. But now, as calmly as she had handled the car, she reached up and worked her fingers between his. The beastly power of the engine beneath her, the expanse of the road ahead, she owned this moment and everything in it.
"Oh shit, I almost forgot," said Manny.
He pulled from his waistband an icy, dripping bottle of Coke. He pressed the yellow callus of his thumb against the cap until it slid off. He wiped it dry with his shirt tail, then passed it to her, and beaming, she grasped the bottle like a trophy. The sun was slung low on the horizon, wrapped in gauzy clouds of sherbet. Kit was squinting to read the backlit exit sign when Manny signaled to get off the highway. As she parked in the spot closest to their motel room, she was already looking forward to debriefing the run, going over every moment, fine-tuning their approach. Manny walked around front and opened her door. She thought he was being chivalrous, something he only ever did when someone else was watching. She didn't need special treatment, but she didn't hate it either. Today, at least, she'd earned it. Manny motioned with a flick of his fingers for her to get out, like sweeping crumbs.
You can leave it running, he said. I got somewhere to be.
Kit was puzzled. She shut off the engine and got out of the car. She was a foot shorter than him, and she hated that she would never be big enough to meet him eye to eye. How could he take her seriously when he was looking down on her?
Somewhere to be? Don't you want to celebrate?
Manny said nothing and dropped into the driver's seat. All the levity of moments before stalled and sank. Kit felt 13 again.
Where are you going?
She was ashamed to hear the whine of disappointment in her voice. Manny looked to be elsewhere.
I'll be back before morning, probably.
He shifted the seat back, checked the mirror, and tongued a lemon drop from a little metal canister.
Don't wait up.
Kit reeled at the chill of his casual shift away from her. How could he leave her after the day they'd had? Who would he rather be with? Had she done something wrong? The rejection smacked her like a toxin, noxious and systemic. The sun disappeared, and in an instant, the glow of moments before became the faded purples and grays of an old bruise. Manny restarted the engine, and a musk of gasoline and motor oil surrounded them. He tipped his cowboy hat. The rage set in like a centrifuge, spitting hot blood outward to Kit's extremities. Before she knew what she was doing, she had swung through the open window and punched him in the nose. He hunkered down, and she opened the door and grabbed him by the collar of his shirt. He pushed her skidding onto her ass, but she was up and lunging for him before he'd even gotten out of the car. He swiped, she dodged, and then kneed him in the groin, and he crumpled to the pavement, moaning. She kicked him in the ribs and soft organs, screaming on impact. How could he build her up, let her feel big and important and strong when he was just going to toss her aside? Even now, she was incapable of revealing the words she wanted to say. What about me? Manny got to his feet and folded Kit over his shoulder as she thrashed, nearly bringing them both to the ground. He kicked the motel door in and slammed her down on the bed, pinning her at the wrists and thighs like an insect. His face, studded with sweat and grit, hovered an inch from hers. Kit felt equally compelled to kill him and to surrender. His expression moved from confusion to outrage, and finally something Kit couldn't place but recognized deep in her core. Her whole body pounded like the beckoning beat of a drum, and she knew the feeling now, a feeling familiar as her shadow. Hunger. Active hunger. The hollowness, the wanting, the urge to stuff. Tired of never having enough, she wanted everything right now. All of him and all at once. He kissed her, sucked her lip between his teeth and bit until it bled. She pushed her tongue into his warm, lemony mouth. Manny skinned her tank top over her head and went for her jeans. But she kneed him into the dresser, furious. He rebounded and snagged a thick handful of her hair, lifting her off the bed, pinning her to the wall.
You think you want this?
He said, gruff in her ear.
But once we start...
I know, she said. But all she knew was that loving him like this was what it would take to keep him.
You have no idea. You have no fucking clue, he said.
There was a bitterness, maybe fear, in his voice that startled her. But everything had already changed. There was no returning to before. The way he looked at her now, desperate and scared, was worth the innocence lost. Someone who needed her that much would never leave. Then they were in it, the meat of it all. Pushing, mashing, their skins and smells. A blind and vicious grasping, lungs outstretched, muscles hot and wrapped around each other. Kit felt like she was fighting for her life. Her body was responding, like it knew something she didn't, but her heart was confused. She kept looking for the blue of his eyes, as if they would guide her through the shadows. But he was somewhere she could not follow. She hated him for going away, even now, and dug her nails into the back of his neck as hard as she could. For a moment, quick and sweet, she found him. He saw her there and seemed to her alert. The wrinkles around his eyes smoothed as he caught his breath. She wanted to cry for the relief, to stop and be wrapped in his arms. But soon he was lost again, and the light in his eyes went out, so swiftly she questioned whether she had imagined it. What followed was both intense and unconscious. A thrashing dream that seemed to go on for hours, and when it was suddenly over, she lay there soaked in sweat, wondering what had happened. Manny rolled away from her, farther than she liked, and slept, and she was alone with the sounds. The toilet running, cattle groaning in the distance, someone scooping ice from the dispenser one floor down. The shame seeped in like car sickness, and she crossed the room to hang her head in the toilet just in case. She drooled into the bowl. Didn't vomit, but wished she could. Then she dressed, and left Manny face down and huffing in heavy sleep. It was late and more lonesome than usual with the new moon void of light. She pushed a quarter into the payphone on the sidewalk by their motel and called the number Red had left her. The phone rang so long she was about to hang up when Red picked up sounding groggy.
What's wrong? She said.
Her voice muffled like she was talking through her pillow.
Who died?
Hey, Red, did I wake you? Kit said.
Oh, is that you, Kit?
Red said, extra sweet.
Honey, you can wake me up anytime. What's shaking?
I guess I just had a question about what you do and stuff.
She could hear Red sniff and sit up in bed.
You wanna know about fucking?
Red said in a voice that was soft and alert. Kit squeezed her eyes shut.
Yes, she whispered.
Well, shit, baby. Where do I begin?
Red cackled, and there was a click and the rush of air as she lit a cigarette.
First off, do not let him come inside you, she said through a breath of smoke. He's gonna want to. Don't let him. Put it in your mouth, put it in your butt, I don't give a damn. But do not let him put it up your cha-cha.
Kit laughed a little. She tried to remember if he had, through the haze of the last few hours. There had been something warm and sticky on her stomach after he rolled off of her that smelled of starch.
I just don't want to do it wrong, Kit said.
Red exhaled into the phone, so Kit got an earful of static. She held the receiver away from her ear.
Baby, baby, looky here. Pleasing men is as easy as putting on lipstick. Nothing to it. You gotta worry about getting your own goodies.
Kit didn't follow.
You find your magic button yet?
Red said.
Little sweet spot at the top of your pussy?
Kit cringed and nodded as if Red could see her.
You get you some canola oil and some berry white and play with that fucker till you arch your back and dig holes in the bed with your toes and your limbs feel like rubber that's been sitting in the sun. Everyone knows how to screw, but you gotta find that good feeling for yourself. 'Cause no man in Texas knows how to give it to you if you don't tell him first. And I should know,
Red said, thumbing her lighter for a fresh one.
'Cause, baby, I fucked them all.
Kit's heart cooled. Red made it sound so simple. But she was describing something completely different from what Kit was doing with Manny. Maybe that's how it was when sex was your business. She hoped one day to feel as relaxed and amused as Red. Normally, Kit could at least fake nonchalance. But tonight with Manny, she was totally lost. This new thing they were doing had her confused and needing him more than she ever had before. It felt like so much more was on the line. She had thought that by having sex with him, she could keep him close. It had felt like a kind of power. But the power had wavered, even as he moved on top of her, and dissolved the moment he was done. And when he had rolled to the far edge of the bed, she could see this power had only been an illusion.
"What do you say, hon?" Red asked. "Does that help?"
"You bet," said Kit, and she hung up the phone, went back to the room, and crawled into bed. Once their relationship turned physical, some opening between them, some space that let her know she was Kit and he was Manny, and that she had existed before and would exist beyond, sealed shut. She was a grafted limb, the broken part of her fused to the broken part of him. His wishes became hers, her desires to fulfill his. There was nothing she could not endure, nothing but losing him. She renewed her wish that being lovers, or whatever they were, would bring him closer to her. But it seemed to drive him into a kind of episodic madness. He would swing from one extreme to the other. One moment, burying his nose in her pits to drink the smell of her, and the next, locking her in the bathroom all night after he had drawn her a bath and she hadn't thanked him. After sex, he would call her a Jezebel, sulk, and get drunk. He was always quitting her, shutting her out, and vowing that it would be just business from there on out. Each time, it stung more than the last, even though he always came around. Since it was her body he couldn't leave, she was glad to offer it up to him, as long as he would keep coming back to her. She learned the mechanics of his moods, when to lay low, when to be bold, or pull away to draw him near. She got by on a reservoir of good times together, like swimming the warm, muddy waters of the Brazos, or eating breakfast for dinner and sneaking into a double feature, or, best of all, when they were working. They ran all the regular cons, picked pockets and purses, shoplifted and swindled, but nothing worked him up like the thrill of an armed robbery. The formula had worked every time. Always off the interstate, at the end of the day so the till was full, far enough from a police station that they would have plenty of time to get out before the law came. As long as they stuck to the plan, they would never get caught.
"Taxes are for suckers," Manny said one time when Kit asked him what it was like to have a job.
Working for wages, giving the government a cut of your earnings, clocking in and out. He said all that was akin to slavery. Kit didn't like when he ranted. It made him seem smaller, the way he thought about normal things like working for a living. She would have rather heard him say the truth, that he knew it was bad to steal, but he did it for fun. Kit's truth was that she stole to make Manny happy. The price for the good times was always the same. When a job was done, the cocksure invincibility of the robbery left him rabid for her. With Manny, It was wild and angry, competitive. She was a gladiator, clashing and lunging and fighting to stay in the game just a little longer. Kit's strength was no match for Manny's, but she was slippery and able to distract and evade his grasp. They fought and strangled each other, punching and fucking and heaving desperately until they collapsed and he slept like an infant while she roamed the room, shaking the fight from her bones. Kit was slow to mature, and it plagued her to look so much younger than she felt. Manny said it was poor nutrition that kept her scrawny, that she'd never have a figure. But by the time she was 18, Kit had finally grown into her limbs and filled out the seat of her jeans. She kept her hair waist length and loved to feel it swish behind her. Around this time, she noticed men noticing her. She felt their eyes shadow her as she walked. She'd scowl or spit on the ground at their feet. But sometimes, if the man was handsome or seemed like he would be kind, in a small, quiet place, she let herself enjoy the attention. Manny bloodied a lot of noses over Kit, but increasingly, he took out his jealousy on her. One night, they were smoking outside a bar, and a young man with aviators on his head and rings on every finger grabbed her between the ass cheeks. Manny tackled the guy into a pile of garbage bags. The guy still had a lit cigarette in his mouth, and Manny took it and put it out in the guy's ear, then kicked him in the spleen. That night, he was on top of her, his face all crumpled.
"Why do you have to egg them on?" he said,
veins snaking across his forehead.
"You think you can do better than me?"
She was so stunned and confused, she didn't try to fight back when he held her neck down with the butt of his hand so hard she lost consciousness. He dunked her in a cold bath, and when she came to and looked in the mirror, the whites of her eyes bloomed red where the vessels had burst. The next morning, he rolled toward her and tickled her nose with his fingertips like nothing had happened. She couldn't look him in the eyes. She missed the Manny she had first loved, strong and aloof and dripping with charm. These days, she never knew which Manny she would get. One minute, he was cold and callous. The next, manic and deranged, or paranoid, brooding, possessive. Other days, he was lusty and didn't want to leave the bed. It was easier to blame herself for the way she looked and for letting Manny have sex with her. He had tried to stop, she reasoned, but she'd kept it going. She had wanted to keep him so bad she'd made a deal with the devil and lost. One day in April when she was 19, after a couple of profitable runs outside Austin, Kit was sitting cross-legged on the floor watching TV when Manny brought home a newspaper. He slapped it into her lap and sat down next to her. He pointed to an article below the crease. Police link Texaco robberies. The article said they'd noticed a pattern in three robberies in the Austin County area and were coordinating with police in neighboring counties to see if there were any more instances that would fit. He pulled her face to his and kissed her, hard, like he was drinking her in.
"We have a trademark," he said,
a grin forming on his face.
"They said we have style. People are starting to talk, calling us the Texaco twosome." "Here," he said, opening the paper to where the story continued and laying it out on the floor in front of her. "Get this. Police have identified several features common to all the robberies. There are two accomplices. One manning the getaway vehicle,
The other holding the cashier at gunpoint while collecting the money. The ringleader is described as a tall, fit man in his 30s. Witnesses have remarked on his cool demeanor and charming persona. One woman is quoted here as saying, "I couldn't see his face, but I could tell he was a looker. Something about his eyes. You never did see something so blue." He slapped his thigh. "Ha! You hear that? We're famous! They love us." She didn't see the upside of this turn of events. With the police now coordinating and sending word to the press, they'd surely be caught and thrown in jail. They'd go to separate prisons, and she worried she might never see him again. She crumpled the paper and tossed it aside. "How can you be happy about this?" she said. "Are you trying to get us locked up?" Manny looked at her like she was insane and smoothed the wrinkles out of the newspaper. "We're not gonna get caught," he said, sullen. "I'm too smart for those country pigs. They talk a big talk, but they ain't coordinating shit. They're telling the press because they gotta make it look like they're doing something." The more he talked, the angrier she got. Her throat was tight with all the words she wouldn't dare say to him. She turned away and pulled a loose string from the hem of the bedspread. He flicked her hard on the back of her head. "Don't you turn away from me. We're supposed to be partners. You wanted in on what I was doing, and this is just part of the package." A part of her melted at the word partners. It was what she had wanted. So much more than what she had thought possible for someone like her. A discarded girl with a made-up name. Manny had found her, given her a life, and taught her what she knew. She owed him, but she had too much to lose to get locked up on account of his vanity. "If we get caught," she said, dead serious, "I'll never forgive you." For a tense moment, Manny merely looked at her, the way he sometimes did when he was provoked, but did not want to be seen losing control. She waited to be hit or shoved into the bedspread so hard she couldn't breathe. Instead, Manny picked himself up off the floor, took a shower, and didn't speak to her for a week. After that, she was more careful with her opinions. "Cheer up, kitty. We're going for a ride," he said one morning after he decided to start speaking to her again. He stripped the sheets away from her. "Where to now, then?" she said, hoping he would say they were heading somewhere far from Austin to wait out the hype around the Texaco twosome. They had kept a low profile hiding out since the write-up in the paper. But she needed more distance between her and Austin County. "Oh, just wait and see," he said as he folded one of his shirts into a perfect rectangle. After they'd packed up their few things and eaten at a stand that served patty melts and fries and Cokes and nothing else, they headed south on Route 77 from Giddings down through Schulenburg, then cut southwest at Hallettsville. He was keeping a wide berth from Austin, at least. They had just passed through Yoakum when she thought she saw the filling station where Manny had taken her out for the first time.
She wasn't sure why, but the sight of that place lodged a pit in her stomach. As they approached Cuero, Kit saw billboards leading up to a motel called Clifford's Hollywood Palace, each one boasting a different celebrity. Mae West folding forward, her bosom spilling out.
Come up and see me sometime, why don't you?
Elvis mid-swivel, snarling.
Come on down and thank you very much.
Little Richard, crouching over a piano. Black dash over his lip. A bird's nest on his head.
Good golly! Come to Clifford's!
The closer they got, the edgier Manny seemed. His voice ran dry, and he ate his lemon drops by threes, like nuts. The air was thick with rotten eggs. Kit pulled her t-shirt up to cover her nose and mouth.
What the shit is that smell? She asked.
Manny started looking for his exit and switched on his brights.
That's sulfur carried over from the oil field in Lulling, he said. That's the smell of money.
An hour and a half after they had left Giddings, Manny stopped the car under the porte cochere of the motel advertised on the billboards and led her inside. The reception office of Clifford's Hollywood Palace was the prettiest room she had ever seen, pretty enough to disperse the anxious feeling in her gut. The ceiling was painted gold, with a complicated chandelier dropping from its center. The carpet was primary red and hatched with marks from a recent cleaning. Three walls were mirrored, and Kit felt pleasantly disoriented seeing all these versions of herself. She followed the line of her profile. Flat, short forehead, broad nose, full lips, and a squared-off chin. Thick, haphazard braid that was so coarse it held itself together. The padding of puberty had melted away, and the contours of her face looked as if they had been carved and sanded out of soft wood. She didn't see a pretty girl, but she liked what she saw. She had a fighting face. The receptionist looked like a bellboy in his cream suit with green velvet trim and brass buttons. He broke into a studied smile and spread his arms wide.
Welcome to Clifford's famous Hollywood Palace. Here for a romantic getaway?
As a matter of fact, Manny said, hanging his arm on her shoulders, it's our honeymoon.
Kit shifted slightly away from Manny. He had only ever presented her as his daughter. Why would he change the script now? She glanced over at him, and he seemed irritated, like she should just go with it. She forced a smile across her teeth. After sizing Kit up briefly, the receptionist clapped.
Congratulations, you two! I'll put you in the James Dean suite. Comes with a complimentary bottle of bubbly.
Manny bristled.
Uh-oh, no way. What else you got?
The receptionist seemed to take this personally. He sucked in his cheeks and took a measured breath.
We have several rooms, he said, running his finger down his list. But I can assure you, the Dean is the best available.
Manny shook his head. He didn't like pushback.
I don't want that room. James Dean was a fag and a loser, okay?
He said as if it were common knowledge.
What else you got?
The receptionist pulled the ledger toward him and smirked.
Maybe you should ask her where she'd like to stay. James is very popular with the ladies.
Manny lunged over the counter and grabbed the receptionist by his velvet collar. The man shrieked and looked ready to cry. Manny leaned in. His hair had come out of its ponytail and brushed the receptionist's cheek.
"Why are you making this so hard for me?" Manny said.
Kit shrunk away from Manny's thin-skinned reaction. Once, he had been slicker than oil. Now he seemed a slave to his impulses. She wanted to peel out of there and find somewhere new to stay, but she knew she had to smooth things over and bring Manny back to Earth.
"I think what he's saying, sir," Kit said,
"is that he wants a room with tits." The guy rubbed his neck under the collar and chuckled nervously.
"Right," he said. "We should have something that fits that description."
She read the ledger upside down and fished a tenner out of Manny's pocket, slipping it to the receptionist. "Dolly Parton's available. We'll take that one." The Dolly Parton room featured color TV, a deluxe, heart-shaped bathtub, and a life-size cardboard cutout of Dolly wearing a purple bell-bottom jumpsuit, her hair a regal sculpture of curls. She was rigged to a turntable, spinning to the song Jolene. A purple sequined bedspread and matching curtains, plush lilac carpet that was thick and deep as grass. Kit seesawed the boots off her bare feet, tossed them to the side, and wiggled her toes in the dense synthetic yarn. Manny locked and chained the door behind him and hoisted his duffel and her backpack onto the bed. He sat on the edge, and the backpack slid down the sequins to the floor. He was unsettled. She felt she was in trouble for something. Could be he was still mad from their last fight, when she said she would never forgive him if they got caught. Sometimes he chewed on resentments for days before exploding at her. His argument so detailed there was no room for her to fight back. She went to the bathroom, removed the paper lid from a glass by the sink, and drank until she was full. Dolly stopped singing. Kit heard the TV turn on, change channels, and flare off in a crackle of static. Then it was still, quieter than sleep. For a moment, she had a flash of walking out to find Manny on the carpet with a gun in his hand, the insides of his skull broadcast across the walls. She held her breath, turned the knob, and slowly opened the door. Manny stood there very much alive and looking kind of smug, like he had won a game she hadn't known they were playing. He smiled, sly and amused, lip curled over good straight teeth, a fan of creases at the eyes. She relaxed when he smiled, always. He was holding something out to her, a ring perched like a hat on the tip of his little finger.
"I've been carrying this damn thing around with me for weeks, trying to figure out how I'm gonna ask you," he said, and drew a halting breath. "It's strange, after all we've been through, to ask this of you. I never wanted to be married before, but it doesn't feel right anymore, us not being family in the eyes of the law."
Kit froze up, terrified of saying the wrong thing. He sank to one knee, and it struck her as so odd and upside down, she smiled. He tracked her closely, seemed to be searching her face for a sign. The ring looked pricey, a teardrop set high on a gold band. It caught the light and winked.
"Where did you steal that from?"
she asked, edging away from the proposal like it was a snake.
"I didn't steal it," he said, looking hurt. "I bought it. Cash."
Maybe she should have jumped up and down and thrown herself into his arms, weeping, "Yes, yes, of course, yes." Forever was a good thing, wasn't it? Especially for someone like her. She should be grateful. She should do whatever it took to keep the good thing going. But everything about this setup rubbed her the wrong way. the fact that he was proposing after shunning her for a week, and that he had either thrown money away for a diamond or stolen one and lied about it. She could not understand him like this, below her, as if begging. Then, to her horror, an involuntary snicker forced its way through her nose. His smile faded. Eyes darted over her face in a silent rage. A sheen of sweat appeared above his lips, which had lost their lively curl and were pressed tight against each other. She looked away and locked eyes with Dolly, curvy and apple-cheeked, willing herself to be serious.
"Stupid fucking idea,"
he said, standing, and curled the ring into his fist.
"Wait, no, start over," Kit said. "I'm sorry."
She had no plan for making this right. Once he turned sour, it was nearly impossible to bring him back.
"Don't you have to have a birth certificate to get married?" she asked.
Reasoning with him was pointless, but she was frantic.
"I don't have documents. We could never do it legit anyway, I don't think."
"It was a stupid fucking idea."
He pitched his voice in such a way that her eardrums chimed.
"You're a child."
"I'm 19, she said, not sure why she was arguing.
"You're immature. I was trying to do you a favor, make you legitimate. I could have faked your documents. It would have been fine."
"I'm sorry. You just caught me off guard," she said,
the worry making her sick in her throat.
"Just let me think about it."
"You blew it, kitten. There's no do-overs with shit like this. Best you learn that sooner than later."
He went to the purple toilet, lifted the lid with his toe, and dropped the ring into the water.
"It's fine. It's just a fucking rock."
"You can't do that."
She scrambled after him, reached into the water, and brushed against the diamond's beveled edge. He flushed. The ring nudged toward her fingertips and then slipped out of sight.
"No!"
He took the duffel with his clothes and his gun and started to leave. She was furious.
"You can't leave! You're being ridiculous!"
she yelled. She found an ashtray and flung it at his head. It spun past his cheek and dented the wall.
"Get back here and talk to me like a man."
He kept walking and opened the door. She threw herself into the door, crushing his hand. He winced, spread his fingers out, and then made a fist. She held her breath, waited for the hit. But he just walked out without a word, without looking at her at all. She chased him outside, jumped on his back, choked him in the crook of her arm. She could smell the grease in his hair, the smoke from his last cigarette. He slammed her back against the brick wall of the motel, and she dropped to the ground. Though her head spun, she could see well enough to watch him stuff his duffel through the back window of the Mustang and drive away. She screamed, but could not match the roar of the engine or the distance he had already covered. He had left before, just not like this. She knew she had humiliated him, touched something brittle at his very core. She had ruined everything. She gasped as her ribs curled in on her lungs. She could not breathe, felt she could die here in this deserted lot. She dropped her head, her hair drawing closed around her face. The numbing began, a softness in her lips, a fuzz that spread across her skin and into her bones. It was like static on the television after the screen went blank. The panic sounded a warning. "He's gone. He's gone. He's never coming back." That was swiftly, mercifully silenced. It had been so long since she numbed out, she had forgotten how good it felt afterward. Alert and relaxed. The pop of caffeine and the mellow of alcohol. She brushed the grit off her ass and went inside, reminding herself that he had never left for good. He'd be back. She was sure of it. She went to the toilet to see if she could get the ring back. It had been heavy and small. Maybe the force of the flush hadn't been enough to drag it all the way down. Maybe she could reach for it. She lifted the padded seat and straddled the bowl, snaked her hand into the hole and felt around with her fingers, careful not to knock the ring out of reach. She shifted and dropped her right shoulder to gain a few extra inches, resting her cheek against the lavender rim. She wiggled her fingers in tiny increments until at last she grazed the ring with her knuckle. Her fingers were bundled and couldn't grasp, so she pulled her hand back and reapproached to center the ring in the hole, then dragged it slowly with the tip of her middle finger. She pulled it out, dripping water in a trail across the floor, and ran it under the tap. She set it aside, washed her hands, and held the ring to the light. "What a fucking drama queen," she said aloud. She didn't know about diamonds, but it looked costly. She had a hard time believing he'd spent money on it, and figured he must have lifted it off someone, some Houston socialite with skinny fingers. She put it on, held out her hand. It was beautiful in itself, twinkled against her skin, but she felt ridiculous wearing it. Impractical and uncomfortable. She tugged and screwed it over her knuckle and slipped it into the pocket of her backpack. Chapter 13. The next day, Kit woke up sprawled across the bed. She had wondered if Manny would have slipped in while she slept, as he sometimes had, or if he would roll in that evening smoking someone else's cigarettes, drunk and cranky. He'd been gone at least 2 days before, maybe three. She wasn't worried. She folded a stick of peppermint gum into her mouth, wiggled her feet into her boots, and took off for some food. The receptionist directed her to a supermarket about 2 miles down the road, and she set to walking. She checked the pocket of her jeans and found about $100 from their last run. Manny was treasurer and always handled the money, but she had slipped a couple fifties before he took inventory. She often took a cut without his knowledge as a small tax for the risks she took for him. She walked through the brightly lit aisles of the supermarket and filled her basket with all the food she knew he liked. Instant coffee, hickory meat sticks, Fritos, bean dip. After the cashier had rung up her items, she pocketed her change and walked the long stretch of highway back to the motel. She replayed his proposal over and over again, each time like a kick to the ribs. How could she have been so ungrateful, so stupid? He had bluffed about other things to get his way, but not this. By the time she got back to the room, she found herself so hungry for Manny that she tore the room apart looking for some piece of him. But he hadn't stayed long enough to unpack. There was only an empty lemon drops tin, crushed underfoot. She picked it up and pried it open and smelled its citrusy dust, licked a little that had gathered in the seam, and cried. She wept over the days they had spent together, the things she had never told him. She wished she could cut him out of her, but he was now a vital organ and nothing else seemed to work right without him. In her fit, she had torn the sliding closet door from its runners. Hanging from a hook inside the closet was her beat-up backpack, the one she'd had when Manny found her. In the outer pouch were the phone numbers and addresses she had saved, Red's and Eleanor's. Then she unzipped the main compartment and pulled out its precious contents. The pink shell souvenir from Galveston, the plastic baggie containing the note from her mother, and Manny's ring. She pressed the note to her cheek and tried to imagine her mother scribbling the instructions on the hood of a car, but all she saw were colorless geometric shapes. Then she held the tiny chandelier to the light and twirled it. Its strands of pink shells tinkled against each other and reminded her of the feeling that day, of hopeful surrender. That day she signed herself over to him. Last, she put the ring on her finger and held it out, felt its facets and smooth band and the claw that held the stone. He must have loved her when he picked it out. He must have wanted to keep her. That had been something, hadn't it? She wiped her eyes and put the note back and zipped the pocket closed. She put Dolly in the closet and brought the slatted doors together, for it pained her to look at pretty things. People loved beauty. They couldn't help it. Kit was not beautiful, but she had, she thought, been loved. Despite all the wrong she had done, and wrong done to her, Manny had seen something in her. He had taken her along and shown her his trade. They had been partners, and she had carried her weight and then some. She should be grateful to have felt his love at all, but she wished she'd never met him, now that it was gone and she was alone. Alone. Kit ran out of food a week after Manny left, and had given the rest of her money to the manager, who demanded payment for the room. She was still short, but convinced him to let her stay another night on the promise that Manny would be back with the money. By now, she was reckoning with the fact that Manny was gone for good. It was only a matter of time before the manager unlocked the door and clipped the chain to shoo her out like the trash she was, always had been. Hours ago, she had finally summoned the will to leave the bed to pee and had worked through the steps she would take, movement by movement. She would crawl if she had to. But before she could pull the sheets away from her legs, her bladder had let go. There was so little urine, a bright, pungent splash of it, that she rolled to the other side of the bed, grateful she would not have to get up after all. She was just beginning to drift into sleep when the phone rang. The sound cut across the room and startled her. She froze and listened, wondering if she had conjured it. It rang again, echoing. She groped across the bed, pushed herself up, and reached out for the phone. She was so weak she dropped the receiver and collapsed back onto the bed. Then, groping, she found the receiver again and raised it to her ear. In the background, there was a soupy noise of music and chatting, and then someone cleared his throat and spoke.
"You're still there," he said.
The relief swept her upright. She squeezed her eyes shut and bit the back of her hand. He couldn't know how much he'd hurt her. She closed her eyes to focus on his voice, which was heavy with whiskey.
"I knew it," he said. "I knew you'd wait for me."
The sweet and slow of his voice dripped over her. She listened in a kind of rapture.
"I picked up a job in Oklahoma," he said. "Scored pretty big. You would have loved it."
She imagined him working without her, or worse, with someone else.
"You giving me the silent treatment?"
he said, irritated already.
"All right," she said. "I'm here." "Guess you might have wondered where I was," he said.
Wondered. The word was cruel in its understatement.
"How much?"
She had to keep her mind on numbers or she would crumble.
Huh?
The job, she said. How much?
Oh, enough, he said. Doesn't matter. I'll be back tomorrow. I'll take you to dinner.
The anger came quickly, and she imagined all the ways she would show him he could never do that again. Every time she opened her mouth to speak, the only thing she wanted to do was scream. And so she imagined that, her dark and screaming mouth a cave, with bats and bees and fire and bile spilling out and swirling around him until there was nothing left of him but sparks and dust. And yet, suffering wasn't meant to be seen. The most powerful thing she could do, the only way to hurt him, was to shrug and ignore him. She looked around the littered den she'd been living in and could see the suicidal state of her room like it belonged to somebody else. The few rays of light that eked between the curtains caught dust motes billowing. It was a long, weary walk to the maid's closet down the hall, but when she got there, she was able to pick the lock and found a 3-gallon tub of cheese puffs. She sat with it between her legs and ate them, one orange ball at a time until she felt her strength return. Then, she sucked and chewed the cheese paste off her fingers and rolled the housekeeping cart down the covered walkway to her room. She stripped the sheets, sallow and rank, the pillows dappled with dried tears and drool, and made the bed like Manny had taught her, with hospital corners so tight you needed 2 strong hands to undo them. After dousing a rag in ammonia, she scrubbed every hard surface in the room until it shone. With a big canister of Comet, she scoured away the water lines, the copper sediment, even cleaned the inside of the toilet tank until the muscles in her arm felt like custard and the tank was better than new. She vacuumed the plush lilac carpet and opened all the windows to air out the stench of her misery. She could smell the damp stink of her body now, felt her scalp crawl with grease, tongued the gluey surface of her teeth. She showered with the little free soaps and shampoos and brushed her teeth till they bled and carved the grit from under her nails. She could hear the suede crooning of a Willie Nelson song from an open window and suddenly remembered Dolly. She found her leaning in the closet, still cheerful as the cherry on an ice cream sundae. She lashed Dolly back to her rigging on the turntable and positioned the stylus. It was a happy room again, its freshness and color restored. Just the act of cleaning had lifted her spirits so much that she wondered if she had done it sooner, things wouldn't have gone so terribly south. She unscrewed a mini vodka she'd pocketed from the maid's closet and drank it like water. "I've been just fine without you," she told herself. "Just fine." Then she lathered her hands and worked the diamond ring over her knuckle with soap. She rinsed it of suds and admired the stone, a perfect frozen teardrop. Its value pulsed in her palm. She could sell it for thousands, or sew it in the lining of her backpack for a rainy day. A little windfall, something just for her. As she turned the ring over in her palm, she knew the money didn't matter. What she could not stomach was the thought that Manny would ever know how completely he had broken her by leaving, that she had gone after it and worn it like a comfort while he was gone. She pinched the golden band between 2 fingers. Its facets spraying the room in tiny flecks of light. Then dropped it in the toilet and flushed. This time, she did not go after it. Kit awoke from deep black sleep to the sound of the Mustang grumbling up to the motel. She heard him take the stairs by 2s and walk right up to the door and pause. A minute went by, then 3. Was he having second thoughts? Did he know she was listening? If he turned around, would she go after him? No, she vowed. She would never chase him again. 10 minutes went by, and an ill feeling at the back of her throat told her he wasn't coming. All the flames and the bile and the bees gathered in her mouth, and she threw off the sheets, launched for the door, swung it wide, and opened up her mouth to scream. But she couldn't, because there was Manny ramming into her, into the place the scream would have been. He clamped his hands over her cheeks and ears and sucked her mouth till it felt like her tongue was coming away at its root. It happened so quickly, her only reaction was to fight, and she clawed at his neck and kneed at his groin. She let out a muffled, "Get off of me," one word at a time when she could break the suction from his mouth and finally push him off and caught her breath. And he let her. He returned to her at half speed, distant behind the eyes, but driven. He took her by the waist and carefully rolled down her jeans like a woman removed her stockings, lowered her to the bed, and lay over her, breathing into the mess of her dark hair. He moved on her slowly, rhythmically. He had never come at her like this before. Sex had always been war, never soft, but piercing, a test. Now, she found that she could feel everything so acutely, every subtle movement, until a warming pleasure crested, then swelled again and again, each peak warmer and fuller than the last. And each time she thought they were done, there would be more heat, and she'd hold him deeper, wrapped around all of him. She was so lost in the softness of the feeling, like their very cells were mingling and melding together, that she did not think to look for the signs that it was time to pull him away. By the time she noticed, when he rolled his head back so far it disappeared behind his neck, and his moans turned into ragged little breaths, and he held her hips to his like he was punching through her, she knew he had already come inside her. She remembered Red's warning. She had always been careful to pull him up and plant him in her mouth to finish. But tonight, she wasn't thinking. She left him sleeping and drew a bath in the goofy heart-shaped tub. While waiting for the tub to fill, she scooped out the dollop he'd left in her, wiped it on a tissue, and tossed it in the purple wicker trash can. She lowered herself into near-scalding water, swished her fingers around again to flush out any residue. She recalled the grainy silhouettes of tadpoles she'd seen in a science textbook, imagined them swimming in formation out of her, tails flicking, and almost smiled. He was back. A giddy relief. A feeling so profound it was religious. Opened her heart and her senses. The chlorinated smell rising up from the water. The drip, drip from the faucet. The chill on the parts of her body, head, shoulders, knees, that weren't submerged. It was as if she were returning to the world after a long absence, and everything was like new. She closed her eyes and rested her head against the plastic lip of the tub and breathed out.